We begin this week with the topic of child sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. For millions of Catholics across the U.S., the issue has cut deep for decades. The release of a Pennsylvania grand jury report detailing hundreds of such cases last month opened those wounds again, prompting renewed scrutiny of Catholic clergy and even calls for Pope Francis to step down. Among those asking for more information is Illinois' own Bishop Thomas Papraki of the Springfield Diocese. Papraki has long been an outspoken voice on issues like homosexuality and abortion. His stance on sexual abuse in the clergy is no exception. He believes the papacy is hiding important documents on disgraced former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick and is calling for an investigation. Our Sam Dunklaw sat down with Bishop Papraki this week. He says he regrets the abuse that has happened in the past, and the bishop calls on the church to heal together.
What do you make of the Pennsylvania grand jury report? A lot of the American media reported it as bombshell allegations and revelations. What's your take on it?
Well, unfortunately, this is not something that we haven't seen before. There have been news reports over the last several years of unfortunate incidences, very terrible incidents of sexual misconduct with minors on the part of clergy. And I think what is different or perhaps bringing this to another level at this time with the Pennsylvania report is the fact that it's so extensive going over a number of decades. Then I think it's also heightened by the recent allegations regarding former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, you know, that apparently he was involved in sexual abuse as well himself. So the questions of how that implicates the hierarchy and all this. So I think a lot of things have just converged at the same time that have brought this to a more serious level than it has been in the past. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that what was discovered in that grand jury report is indicative of what's happening around the country? Do you suspect that it's as extensive as the grand jury found in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think what I would say about that is, yes, is this happening? I would use the past tense that this happened more extensively in the past, because even in the Pennsylvania grand jury report, there were only two indictments in the last 10 years. And so I think what we're seeing is a historical pattern here of cases that emerged that kind of parallels what was happening in our society with the sexual revolution in the 1960s and 70s and changes that were taking place in our culture and apparently affected even the clergy at that time. I think that, however, since the adoption of the essential norms and the charter in 2002 and our zero tolerance policy, I think and I pray that hopefully we have learned better how to deal with these in the present as compared to with the way they were handled in the past.
Mm-hmm. The jury report cites the conduct of bishops in Pennsylvania as well as some of the higher-ranking clergy members. Why do you suspect leadership was behaving like this? What sort of allowed a culture like this to form over so many decades?
Well, I think that what happened was you had bishops who were confronted with these kinds of allegations and frankly probably didn't know what to do or how to handle them. Bishops are basically, you know, raised from the ranks of priests, and so we're trained in the seminary. We study philosophy and theology, and then working in a parish, you're celebrating the sacraments, you're dealing with the administration of a parish, and when you become a bishop, this may be the first time you've ever dealt with something like this. And so in some ways, it's difficult. You know, it's always easier in hindsight. It's easier for us now to say, well, what we know about the problem and about recidivism rates, we know that one strike and you're out. They didn't know that 40 years or 50 years ago, being confronted with those problems for the first time, half a century ago. I don't know that they had the wisdom or the knowledge that we have today about this.
This next question is a little more direct towards this diocese, and to the extent that you can answer it, what does this diocese history with this problem look like? Have there been instances that you're willing to discuss?
There have been, unfortunately, like any other diocese, there have been cases. I'm aware of only one case that was reported during my time as bishop since 2010. There was one case of an allegation where the priest was removed from ministry and a report was made to the proper authorities, and the people were told. I had a town hall meeting with the people. So that's the approach we take now, is we tell the people, we tell the police, we call the Department of Children and Family Services. They made an investigation. If somebody were to ask us how many cases have we had over the past 70 years, frankly, I don't have that information because we haven't done that kind of a search of our records to find that out. Mm-hmm. And then I guess part of that question would be, you know, for what purpose are we going back 70 years to find something? If in many cases the perpetrator is deceased, and you know, I think it's just a question of are we just looking for sensationalism, or are we looking for a solution to a present problem? And in that regard, I would hope that the measures that we've put into place are dealing with the present situation. But, you know, I'm always open to suggestions. If there are new ways that make our parishes and schools even safer, I'm certainly open to that.
In response to that, what do you say to those who allege they were abused or had some sort of misconduct happened in the church, and they're still alive, but it happened 40 years ago, but they're still dealing with what they allege is the trauma of that event.
Right. In those cases, I mean, we do try to do what we can to help people. We have a victim assistance minister at our diocese. We do pay for counseling. You know, so if somebody says that their lives have been damaged by this, we try to look at their unique situation and see in what ways we can help them to get their life back on track.
Earlier this past week, you had criticized Pope Francis's response to former Apostolic Nuncio Vigano's letter as not adequate. Between what Vigano claims in the letter that was discussed a lot last week and then the papal response, who among them is to be believed?
Well, I think that's what Archbishop Vigano is calling for. He's saying that he told Pope Francis himself in 2013 that there were issues with McCarrick, and so he's basically saying that if the Pope didn't know it before then, at least he certainly knew it by 2013, and the former nuncio says that he has documentation of that. He may not have it personally, but what he's saying that there are documents in the files at the nunciature in Washington or at the Congregation for Bishops in Rome. So I think the proper response to that would be to say, let's have an investigation. I mean, he's claiming there are documents. Let's have somebody look in the files and try to find those documents and give an explanation. I mean, I compare it to a situation if one of my priests were accused of sexual misconduct and I were asked to, you know, give information about that, I would want to go into the files, especially if I was accused of covering it up and somebody had told me. I'd say I'd want to know what's the basis for that claim. If there's documentation for that, let's produce it.
Mm-hmm. Why then, if I may ask, is there this call to have this Pope resign as a result of what's been going on recently?
Well, I think that from Archbishop Vigano's point of view, he seems convinced that, I mean, for what he's saying, he believes in his heart that he told the Pope and he didn't, and the Pope didn't act on that. So if that were the case, you know, as we've seen other church leaders resign, like I just mentioned, Cardinal Law and others in the church who have had to resign because of their mishandling of cases, I think he's just putting it in the same kind of category.
Mm-hmm. You in the last week have made some public announcements regarding your cooperation with Attorney General Madigan. You've said that you would, quote, agree to speak with Attorney General Madigan and cooperate with law enforcement. I'm wondering if this means you'll allow the diocese or call for churches in the United States to be investigated by civil law enforcement.
Well, I did speak with the Attorney General when she called last week, and she told me she wanted to make sure that our policies were adequate to address the problems and that we don't have any priests that are currently posing a danger to anyone. And I said I totally share in those objectives. I'd be happy to sit down and again review the steps that we have taken, especially since 2002, and the review board that we have in place, the hotline number that we have, people can call and don't have to talk to me or a priest. They can, and we have a lay predominantly lay review board that reviews these cases. But that I'm open to suggestions if there are ways to strengthen what we're doing. I know that our attorney for the diocese has been in touch with the attorney general's office, and they're talking now about trying to schedule a meeting that one where we can get together and discuss this.
I'm going to go back to some comments that you've made on this. Your Excellency had told a Michigan legal group referring to claims brought by sexual abuse victims that the principal force behind these attacks is none other than the devil, unquote. You explained that statement a number of times over the years. I'm wondering where you stand on it at this point.
Yeah, it's always risky when we talk about the devil, because a lot of people have misconceptions about that. When I talk about this in terms of the lawsuits, I think that's been misunderstood as I'm somehow demonizing plaintiffs. You know, those who have been abused themselves, and saying that somehow they're doing something diabolical here. And I certainly don't mean to imply anything like that. You know, people that have been harmed by this, they certainly have a right to proper reparation of this. What I'm saying more in the bigger picture, in terms of when you look at all the millions, or I don't even know, billions perhaps, of dollars that have been spent in settlements, and you think of all of the good works of charity, that if this kind of abuse had not happened and we were not involved in these kind of lawsuits, you know, all the kinds of good works, that charitable works that could be done, and instead we're closing schools, we're closing ecclesial institutions because we don't have the money, and that's what I mean by, you know, that's exactly what, you know, what the devil wants. He wants to try to frustrate our good works and the things that we are doing to serve the Lord. So that's, you know, the fuller explanation of what I mean by that.
In a time when evangelization has been made very important in the church, as important as it is to the church's future, how do you, in this diocese or in conversations you've had with other bishops around the country, reconcile for what has happened, albeit in the past, and despite all that, tell people that it's okay to join the Catholic Church, that they needn't fear of this sort of abuse?
Well, I think that we've seen over the course of the centuries, even in the Bible, how God brings good out of bad. I mean, you go to the story and the Old Testament of King David and his adulterous affair with Bathsheba, and winds up murdering her husband, and out of that comes Solomon, one of the best kings in the Old Testament. And so God can bring good out of bad. I'm hoping and praying that God will bring some good out of this, and I believe that there will come some good. In this regard, last week I was giving an interview, and the reporter asked me a question. He said, "What would you tell people that said that they've lost their faith in the institution of the church?" And my response to that is, ultimately, we're not called to put our faith in an institution. We're called to put our faith in Jesus Christ. So the institution, the church itself, is a means to an end. It's not an end in itself. So the Lord gave us the church to help us to get to heaven. He gave us priests, bishops, and deacons to administer the sacraments and be spiritual guides. But in the end, the question is our relationship with Jesus Christ. So my ultimate spiritual message to people is to not give in to the temptation to just walk away from the church, because I'd say that's exactly what the devil wants us to do. He wants us to give up and to walk away. But to do that would be basically to walk away from Christ, and that's what I hope and pray people will not do.
Shouldn't the church be accountable for what it's done or what it's been accused of doing? And to what extent ought the lay be involved with the clergy in solving this crisis going forward?
Well, yes, I think the lay should be involved in that. I've been dealing with these cases since the 1990s, when I was chancellor of the Archdiocese of Chicago, and we were one of the first dioceses to set up a review board with predominantly lay people. It was majority lay people. We had 6 out of 9 people on the board were lay people. Bishops are accountable to the Pope. Only the Pope can discipline or remove a bishop. But that doesn't mean that you can't have some structure that would allow for a full investigation of an allegation and then a recommendation to the Pope. And I've suggested that vehicle be done through the Apostolic Nuncio offices themselves, that you'd have the a recommendation going through the Apostolic Nuncio, and then from the Nuncio to the Vatican, and ultimately to the Pope. You know, because in the end, yes, you can have You can have the civil law. You can have prosecutors prosecuting the perpetrators of individual cases, but the civil law can't remove a bishop from office. Only the Pope can do that. So it has to be that's why I think it has to be kind of a joint cooperative effort between civil authorities and the church authorities.
Do you have any final message for the faithful of the diocese or those who are sort of on the fence about all of this? What should they think? Where should they stand?
Well, I would urge everyone to stay true to the faith and not give up hope. I know this is all very discouraging, but I assure you of every effort that we will make to address these problems. I promise you zero tolerance in our diocese, and hope and pray that you will grow in your relationship with the Lord, and we will do our best to help you to do that.
Bishop Thomas Papraki in studio with us. Your Excellency, thanks so much for the time.
You're welcome.
Sam Dunklaw with that interview. Earlier this week, the Illinois Supreme Court Justice Ann Burke weighed in on the issue of sex abuse and the cover-up inside the Catholic Church. Burke helped lead an earlier investigation into abusive priests after the last scandal erupted in 2002. Now she and other members of that panel are asking the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to reopen the investigation. This time, the people under scrutiny would be the bishops and cardinals themselves. Burke says there were secret files kept from the panel 15 years ago, and because of that, she says government authorities, who can force the release of documents, should conduct their own investigations.